Welcome to the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of April 23rd, 2012. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's episode of the Fredcast, a New Zealand mountain bike aggressor pleads guilty to assault. Icon Fitness sues popular fitness app developers for patent infringement. Cyclavia and a cyclist's death points out why attention to recalls is very important. Plus, professional cycling news. Then, a review of two smartphone apps intended to keep what's mounted on top of your car safe. And in this case, I don't mean Mitt Romney's dog. And then, finally, inspired by the news, information that you can use to ensure that every product you use is safe for your use out there on the road. Plus, a new contest from the Fredcast and Jensen USA. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. And once again, if I sound strange, it's because I'm recording from a remote location. But hey, at least I'm recording, right? So welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast. It is great to have you back with us. We have a very full show ready for you today. And I want to lead off with a new contest that you can win. And the contest, of course, is sponsored by the Fredcast and Jensen USA. But first of all, I do want to thank our show sponsor, Jensen USA. JensenUSA.com/TheFredcast is where you're going to find an amazing selection of product at incomparable prices with some of the best customer service found anywhere on the web or in retail stores, in a lot of retail stores for that matter. JensenUSA.com is my choice for when I'm looking for cycling products. And when we're now at the beginning of the cycling season, I put in a lot of miles this weekend. The weather was gorgeous in Utah. You know that at this point you need shoes and socks and tires and tubes and hey, maybe you even need a complete bike, and Jensen USA has those as well. So go to JensenUSA.com/TheFredcast or simply go to TheFredcast.com and click the Jensen USA link on the right-hand side of the page. And to make your shopping even easier, Jensen USA has a great contest that we are announcing here tonight for the very first time. We're calling this the Jensen USA Bar Shot Contest, and here's how it works. Get on Twitter, and when you are out on a ride, take a photo over your handlebars looking out at the road ahead or the trail ahead or wherever you're riding your bike. Put it up on Twitter, include the hashtag Barshot, B-A-R-S-H-O-T. Make sure that you include at Jensen USA and at Fredcast, plus your photo and your location, of course, and any other comment that you'd like to include. Send your tweet out between now and 6 p.m. Pacific time on Monday, May the 7th, and then Jensen USA will choose the 10 best pictures, and each of those people is going to receive a $20 gift certificate to Jensen USA. Yes, 20 free dollars to spend however you like at JensenUSA.com, courtesy of the Fredcast and Jensen USA. So send in your bar shot. I'll make sure that I've got details in the show notes and on the Fredcast.com. But start thinking about it now. I love taking these kinds of pictures. I'm sure you will too, and I know your fellow Freds are really going to want to see your pictures. So don't forget to include Barshot as a hashtag, include Jensen USA and Fredcast with the at symbols ahead of them on Twitter. Send your Barshot photo and your location before 6 p.m. Pacific time, Monday, May 7th, and you may win a free $20 gift certificate courtesy of Jensen USA. So thanks to Jensen USA for sponsoring the contest, and thanks to Jensen USA for sponsoring and supporting the Fredcast, and thanks to you for supporting Jensen USA. Well, let's get right into the news. And you'll remember last week we led off the Fredcast with a couple of examples of cyclists behaving badly. We talked even further about it on the Spokesman last week, and I'll have more information on the Spokesman and the next show of the Spokesman coming up. But first, you'll remember one of the stories we talked about was an assault that occurred just outside of Christchurch, New Zealand, where a mountain biker wearing a helmet cam came upon a slower cyclist, asked him to move, and things spiraled out of control. Well, that mountain biker who was caught seemingly assaulting the faster rider on video did appear in court earlier this week. Turns out it is 45-year-old Aaron William Dalton, who appeared in the Christchurch District Court earlier this week and pleaded guilty to the assault of cameraman Jordan Brazell. You'll remember that Brazell is 24 years old and said that he was attacked on the Flying Nun Trail in the Port Hills area of Christchurch on April the 8th, and the entire incident was captured on his helmet cam. Following Dalton's guilty plea, his attorney, Jonathan Eaton, asked for the conviction not to be formally recorded until he has the opportunity to meet with Mr. Brazell for what's called a restorative justice conference. As a result, the judge remanded Dalton without conviction until July 23rd, and he was released on bail, but he was given the conditions that he had to live at his current address and that he have no contact with Mr. Brazell until they have this restorative justice conference. Immediately after his court appearance, Dalton was rushed to a car with a friend, and he did not speak with the media. But his lawyer did speak with the media and said that his client had been humiliated, quote, out of an incident which was a couple of guys having a spat on a mountain bike track. He then went on to kind of give a dig at Brazell, saying, quote, why, just because something happens to be downloaded onto YouTube, does it become a nationwide public interest story? Parenthetically, Mr. Eaton, it's an international story, in case you weren't aware, close parens. Going on, quote, all we're going to find is everybody wears cameras and takes cameras because they might be able to put themselves in the media, unquote. So glad to see that there is a certain resolution in this case, and hopefully it'll serve as a deterrent to others. You know what? Let's just all try to get along and be good to each other out there. We have enough trouble with motorists and with CEOs of minicab companies. The last thing that we need is to be going after each other. So in those famous words, can't we all just get along? Something else we talked about on a recent episode of The Spokesman is an article that appeared in Bicycle Retailer and Industry News on Thursday, April the 12th, 2012, indicating that a Utah-based health and fitness manufacturer, quite a large one as a matter of fact, Icon Fitness, has filed suit against five developers of GPS-based fitness applications. You know, small companies that you've never heard of, like Strava, Garmin, Polar, Fitness Keeper, as in Run Keeper, and Map My Fitness. And I know a lot of you use Strava and Map My Ride, and certainly Garmin and Polar devices as well. So this is of interest to all of us who are using smart devices or even just USB-powered devices to keep track of our fitness, whether it's our runs or our rides. Because at issue in this case, according to Bicycle Retailer, are patents that Icon calls, quote, the 800 patent that was filed in 2005, and it covers, quote, methods and systems for controlling an exercise apparatus using a USB-compatible portable remote device. Another patent, the 271 patent, was filed 4 years earlier in 2001 and includes, quote, the method and apparatus for using physical characteristic data collected from two or more subjects, unquote. So think about how your devices that are on your bike or perhaps on your arm when you're running or riding, collecting things like your heart rate or your power output or your respiration or perhaps your speed, or using the data from your GPS or smartphone that can be uploaded to a website for analysis. So as a result, Icon says that all these processes violate their patents and they are therefore going after people like Polar, Garmin, Strava, etc. Icon is asking for a judgment, finding each of the defendants liable and to award damages to compensate them for their loss of income, and they are requesting a jury trial in all of the cases. As with all legal cases, this one's likely to drag out for quite some time. As I get updates on this, I will be sure to bring them to you here on the Fredcast. But the bottom line is, nobody is saying that you can't use these apps, and nobody is saying that you can't use these devices. If it is judged that Icon wins in this case, my guess is that only at that point would they be looking for perhaps licensing fees from these companies or for cease and desist or pull down of the apps. But for now, you're fine. You certainly are not going to be liable in this case. Go ahead and use your devices, use your apps happily until there is a judgment in the case. Now, when most people think of the city of Los Angeles, they think of Hollywood, Beverly Hills, the beach, and certainly they think of traffic and car culture. And that's what makes this event that I report on occasionally so special. The event is called Ciclavia, and it took place again on April 15th, 2012, when 10 miles of streets were car-free in Los Angeles, making the streets safe for people to ride their bikes, walk, skate, play, or just get out among their fellow citizens and out from behind the wheel of their cars. Now, the first Ciclavias were back in October 10th of 2010. There was another one in April of 2011 and one in October of 2011. The most recent, April 15th, 2012, and 10 miles of streets were absolutely car-free. Now, Ciclavia, in the middle is L.A. for, okay, Los Angeles, is a brainchild of people who were familiar with ciclovias, which started in Bogota, Colombia, over 30 years ago as a response to the congestion and pollution of the city streets. And now they happen throughout Latin America and the United States. But again, perhaps because of its car culture, the most famous occurred and occurs twice a year in the city of Los Angeles. At the most recent, on April 15th, 100,000 citizens got out in those 10 miles of closed roads in the city of Los Angeles, enjoyed good weather and company with their fellow Angelenos. According to Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, quote, "Angelenos are aching for a day without a car. Ciclavia provides us one of those days." And this was the cool added hitch that came along and the surprise that Villaraigosa had. Continuing, he said, quote, "But the change doesn't have to be temporary. So we are taking steps to make it easier for Angelenos to get from point A to point B with or without a car." And it was at that point that he announced and unveiled a privately funded $16 million bike share program with the goal of putting 4,000 rental bikes at over 400 kiosks across the city. The plan that he announced, and let me repeat, it is privately funded, so there's going to be no state, local, or county funds going into this program. Privately funded program includes the plan for over the next 18 to 24 months, these 400 stations in and around areas like downtown LA, the Marina, Westwood, Venice Beach, and Hollywood. Now, the private investment is coming from Bike Nation, who is going to be putting this together, and they've agreed to a minimum contract of 10 years. Villaraigosa, commenting on the fact that this is privately funded, said, quote, "In tough economic times like these, we knew it wasn't feasible to start a public bike share program, but we do know it's what LA needs. We're building the infrastructure, we're making it safe, and we're making it practical for Angelenos to get from point A to point B on two wheels." Bike Nation is initially going to be putting in a small bike share program around Anaheim in the Disneyland area in June, and then they'll be working with Los Angeles' Department of Transportation to figure out which areas they're going to put the kiosks in. Now, for those of you who are wondering what this will cost, it's very similar to the other bike share programs around the country, indeed around the world. Prices include $6 for the day, $1.50 for an hour, or $4.50 for 90 minutes. Again, very similar to places around the United States and North America. Trips shorter than 30 minutes will be free, but you'll be able to get a one-year pass for about $75. Alexis Lance of the Los Angeles County Bicycle Coalition thinks this is a great idea, saying, quote, "We think bike sharing can really bring a lot to the city and greatly increase the number of people who use bicycles, especially for short trips, and introduce both Angelenos and tourists to how easy it is to bike around." Hey, by the way, you know how I mentioned earlier that Ciclavia comes from Ciclovias from Colombia. And I mentioned that these events are very popular in Latin America. If you've ever been to Mexico City, one of the things that you certainly remember is the traffic and the pollution. But what you may not know is that on Sundays, what LA does twice a year, they do every Sunday in Mexico City. About 5 years ago, Mexico City Mayor Marcelo Ebrard began the Sunday rides known as Muévete en Bici. And what they do is they close off lots of major thoroughfares to automobile traffic and giving the right of way to tens of thousands of, well, you name it, cyclists, dog walkers, joggers, people on skates, people on just anybody who wants to go out. The cars are gone and the streets are open. And according to an article I read recently, on some Sundays, there can be up to 80,000 cyclists on the streets. And this is something that happens every Sunday, not just a couple of times a year. You know, quite frankly, I love that they're doing this in Mexico City and in other parts of the world. I love the fact that they're just doing it twice a year right now in the city of Los Angeles. But how great would it be if some of the other major cities of North America, indeed of the world, would take Mexico City's example, follow their lead, and do something similar once a week or even once a month? What a great way to almost shrink the size of some of our, or the perceived size of some of our major metropolises around the world. How great would it be for those of you who live in big cities to think about having your roads closed, not necessarily for a charity walk or run or bike ride, but just to get the cars parked and get out amongst your fellow citizens. What a great thing that would be. So maybe some of you will carry that banner to your cities and see if you can do the same thing, but kudos to Mexico City for making this a commonplace occurrence, and hopefully other cities will take their lead. At Interbike 2010, you may recall that one of the big stories that everyone was buzzing about was Garmin's acquisition of MetroGear, a company that was working on Ant Plus-based power meters that would be mounted in pedals. As a result of the acquisition, everyone was looking forward to what Garmin called the Vector pedal, and everyone was again buzzing about the Vector at Interbike just this last September in 2011, anxiously awaiting the release of the pedals. Originally, the pedals were expected in late 2011. Then everyone expected them in spring 2012, and then summer 2012. And, well, now Garmin has issued a press release indicating, well, that they're not indicating when the Vectors will be available. According to the press release, quote, "After testing our latest advanced prototypes of the Vector system, we are still not satisfied with the results. As you can imagine, Vector is a complex precision measurement instrument, and as of yet, we are unable to ensure that this device will meet the expectations of the cycling community. Presently, we cannot estimate a delivery date, but we do not expect the product to be ready in the summer of 2012 as previously targeted. We understand that this is a highly anticipated product within the cycling community, but Garmin's commitment to quality necessitates this additional delay. We will update our customers when we have additional information to share. Thank you for your understanding." Disappointing. I know a lot of you are disappointed, as I am. I was really looking forward to the Vector, and I'm still looking forward to the Vector because I like the idea of being able to take the pedals from bicycle to bicycle to bicycle without the added weight of, say, a power tap unit, or having to use specific cranks, which obviously you can't take from bicycle to bicycle to bicycle. I have to applaud Garmin. It's clear that they are engaged on quality and customer satisfaction. But of course, like you, I'm disappointed. As soon as there is an update on this, I will let you know, and hopefully I'll be able to bring you a review as soon as the pedals are available. For more information, just go to www.garmin.com, or I've got links in the show notes. Well, if you're like most cyclists, chances are that you've probably experienced the sinking feeling of arriving at the spot where you left your bike, diligently had locked it up, only to find that your bike has been stolen. I know a friend of mine on Facebook, a very good friend of mine in Pasadena, California, has experienced this herself already once this year, and then her daughter experienced the exact same thing just a few days ago. And this has probably happened to all of us at one time or another. And I know I've talked to people out there to whom it's happened numerous times. I remember when I was in Amsterdam and we talked to Mark from Amsterdamized. He said he probably had 80 bikes stolen. Well, there's a group of cyclists in Vancouver, BC, who are simply fed up with it, and they're taking their anger and their skills at making films to create a reality TV, well, a reality web show called To Catch a Bike Thief. I saw the press release, and it was something that I had to check out. This group of Vancouver cyclists has created a web series that they're calling To Catch a Bike Thief to chronicle their adventures as they attempt to recover GPS-tracked bait bikes that they have constructed themselves. According to one of the members of To Catch a Bike Thief, Broderick Albright, quote, "I'm constantly surprised at the level of support and encouragement we receive from everyone in the cycling community for our project." So here's what they're doing. They bought a bike online, modified it, and then they leave it in bike racks around Vancouver, and they wait for someone to come along and steal the bike. But it's on a short leash because they have a dispatch team, they have a security team, they have a tracking team, and they track the bike hoping to learn not only how bikes get stolen, but why they get stolen, and perhaps maybe even deter people from stealing bikes also. According to their press release, series director Kirsten Aubrey envisions a web series in which the full picture of bicycle theft can be really explored by a combination of GPS tracking, research, and documentary-style filmmaking, saying, quote, "I want to understand the big picture of bike theft in order to help cyclists protect their bikes." Now, this was produced, as I said, in Vancouver, British Columbia, and the trailer for what they're calling Season 1 was released on February the 2nd, and the pilot episode is going to release this spring. I've got a link in the show notes. I'm looking forward to watching To Catch a Bicycle Thief. On the last episode of the show, I talked about the fact that we would be changing the format of the way that I do product recalls here on the show, making them briefer, but making sure that I still brought them to you on every episode of the show. And I know when we did the Fredcast listener survey a few months ago, there were a number of you who felt that we shouldn't be including the product recalls in the show. It's sort of a boring part of the show, and I understand that. But this next story really reinforces why I'm going to continue doing product recalls, although a little bit briefer, as I said. A 58-year-old cyclist from Attleboro, Mass., died in a crash in Rehoboth, Mass., in a crash that could have been caused by a recalled fork on his Cervelo bike. Gary Lanoue was riding a Cervelo Soloist bicycle when the crash took place in Rehoboth. He was found by an off-duty Rehoboth police officer who was on his way to work around 5:30 p.m. On Monday, a week and a half ago. The police suspect that the bicycle had a structural weakness in the fork, leading to a sudden crash. Now, the bike in question is a Cervelo Soloist, and the front fork on that bike was recalled several years ago. As a matter of fact, it's a recall that I covered on the Fredcast on show number 106. Show number 106. There will be a link in the show notes. And there are a lot of articles and a lot of speculation online indicating that had Gary known about the recall in advance, that he would have had the chance to take his bicycle to his local dealer and had the condition mitigated. Now, in this case, we don't know for sure whether or not it was the fork the recalled fork that was the cause of Gary's death or indeed of his crash. We do know that Gary is an experienced cyclist. He was training for the local Rhode Island chapters MS Bike Tour, and this was going to be his 15th year participating, with that tour taking place in June. So this is somebody who spends a lot of time on his bike and certainly has been cycling for a long time. There was no foul play and no indication that a vehicle or anyone else was involved. Simply, the police are suspecting the fork and there are investigations continuing. But if it is indeed possible that it was as a result of this recalled fork that Gary lost his life, leaving behind his wife and his kids and his grandchild, I think that it really does point out the reason why it's so important to pay attention to recalls and why I'll be talking a little bit more about that in the features portion of the show. Now, Cervello did respond saying, quote, "We were deeply saddened today to learn about the cycling accident in Rehoboth, Mass. that claimed the life of a cyclist on Monday afternoon. As riders and members of the cycling community, we're greatly concerned about any accident that threatens a rider's life or well-being. Though we currently have a very limited amount of information about the incident, we want to extend our sincere condolences to the gentleman's family and friends. When we have more information, we'll contact you to keep you informed and provide you with an update." So a sad story. I'll have a little bit more at the end of the features section as well, giving you some more ideas on how you can stay safe on any product, whether it's your bicycle or anything else that you buy, and be kept informed of recalls, not just here on the Fredcast, but right in your email box. And I'll give you information about that in the features section. And that's my segue into the next section, which is to let you know that I do have two product recalls to tell you about this week. The first one is a fairly broad recall covering GT, Giant, and Trek bikes with SR SunTour suspension forks. About 17,000 bikes involved here, and specifically, here are the brands, years, and model names to look for. Giant 2011 through 2012, Revel 1 and Revel 1W, GT 2012 Avalanche 4.0 and Avalanche 4.0 GTW, Trek 2012 3700D and 3900D, and these are for SR SunTour suspension fork date codes CK 110301 through CK 110731, and there is a link in the show notes to where you can get more information about this recall. One more recall to let you know about. This one's a lot smaller, only about 600 bikes involved here, but these are from Specialized, and these are the brake levers that came as original equipment on 2010 and 2011 S-Works Shiv bike frame and 2012 S-Works Shiv TT bike frame. Specifically, these are Tektro TL83 brake levers designed exclusively for use with aero bars, and again, sold as original equipment on these very expensive bikes. So again, there is a link in the show notes. If you've got a 2011 or 2010 or 2012 Shiv, make sure that you check out whether or not your brake levers are covered by this recall. Turning from general news to pro cycling news, let's look at some recent results in the UCI World Tour starting on April 15th with the 257-kilometer Amstel Gold Race. After 31 climbs in those 257 kilometers, Enrico Gasparotto catches Oscar Freire, who launched a solo attack 6 kilometers out and then caught just 50 meters from the finish line. Gasparotto winning in 6 hours and 32 minutes, followed closely by Jelle Vandenert from Lotto and Peter Sagan from Team Liquigas. Oscar Freire coming in fourth place, 3 seconds back, followed by Thomas Volkler, Philippe Gilbert, Sammy Sanchez, Fabian Wegman, Rinaldo Nocentini, and Bauke Mollema from Team Rabobank. Just 3 days later, it was the Flèche Wallonne, or the Walloon Arrow, 198 kilometers from Charleroi to Huy. This one won by Joaquim Rodriguez from Team Katusha. Rodriguez attacking on the final Mur de Huy climb, beating out Michael Albacini and Philippe Gilbert. So it was Joaquim Rodriguez in 4 hours, 45 minutes, followed by Michael Albacini from Green Edge, 4 seconds back, and then Philippe Gilbert, followed in fourth through 10th by, in order, Jelle Vandenert, Robert Kisirlovski, Danny Martin, Bauke Mollema, Vincenzo Nibali, Diego Ulisi, and Jürgen Vandenbroek from Team Lotto. Finally, in completed races so far, Liège-Bastogne-Liège, taking place on April the 22nd, was won by Maxime Iglinski, who made a late attack on the final climb, overtaking Vincenzo Nibali, who had gone away about 18 and a half kilometers from the finish. Everyone thought that when Iglinski made his attack, including Iglinski, by the way, that he was simply racing for second place. But then in his own words, quote, "Then I saw Nibali ahead of me, and when I got close to him, I could see he wasn't looking great. I dropped him and went away for what is the biggest win of my career." Maxime Iglinski winning Liège-Bastogne-Liège in 6 hours, 43 minutes, and 52 seconds, followed, again, 21 seconds behind him by Vincenzo Nibali. In third place, it was Enrico Gasparato, followed in 4th through 10th by Tommy Vogler, Daniel Martin, Bauke Mollema, Sammy Sanchez, Michele Scarpone, Ryder Hegdahl, and Jelle Vandenert. Interestingly, there were 4 riders in this year's race in Liège-Bastogne-Liège who were disqualified for a course deviation, included among those riders from Team Movistar, Alejandro Valverde, also his teammates José Rojas, Pablo Lastras, and Angel Madrazo, plus from Team Topsport Vlaanderen Mercator, Lorenz de Vresse. According to race officials, Alejandro Valverde and the others rode onto a shortcut that was a deviation for photo motos. Those are the motorcycles that the photographers ride in order to allow them to pass the peloton after they came off of a climb about 32 kilometers out. These deviations are always set up along courses to allow the photographers to be able to leapfrog the peloton. That's how they get those great shots all the time throughout the day as a stage or a single day race goes on. You'll also find these deviations at the end of the day's race to allow the team cars to get off the course and allow the final sprints to take place at the finish line. The problem here was that Valverde was riding behind the group of photo motos after he had had an accident, had to switch bikes with one of his teammates. So here he was behind the motorcycles, and he simply followed them onto the detour instead of taking the actual race route, which would have been about 600 meters longer. According to ASO official Gilles Magnon, quote, "We don't know if they did it with purpose or not, but the rules state that riders must trace the entire route. They followed motorcycles onto the detour," unquote. And as a result, they were disqualified. Kind of a strange way to end the classics season, but I guarantee you Valverde is going to pay closer attention in the future to the pre-race briefings. And with the close of the classics season, let's take a look at the rankings as of right now on the UCI World Tour. As of April 22nd, Tom Boonen is still atop the rankings in number one. But as a result of all those results I just read off to you, Vincenzo Nibali moves up from 6th into 2nd, and Sammy Sanchez moves up from 4th to 3rd, moving Peter Sagan and Joaquin Rodriguez down the list. Sagan down to 4th, and Rodriguez down to 5th. Rounding out the top 10, Simon Gerrans, Oscar Freire, Michael Albacini, Alejandro Valverde, and Alessandro Ballan. You'll recall that last week we talked about Team Saxo Bank and the fact that with Alberto Contador's being banned from the sport for 2 years, they've lost all of his points and, of course, also his leadership on the team. And I mentioned that Saxo Bank was sitting in last place in the World Tour rankings. I'll kind of keep you updated on this. They are still in last place with 32 points in 18th place. They're behind Française du Jeu in 17th place with 72 points. As a bit of a comparison, the top 3 teams, Omega Pharma Lotto with 547, Leaky Gas Cannondale with 516, Team Katusha in 3rd with 502. So Saxo Bank still struggling at the bottom of the rankings, but I'll keep you posted on this and hopefully we'll watch them move up the rankings as the season goes on. The next race on the calendar taking place this week in Switzerland, the Tour de Romandie. It's a short one-week tour from April the 24th through the 29th. I'll have those results for you on the next show. And then the first of the 3 Grand Tours of the year, the Giro d'Italia, beginning on Cinco de Mayo, May the 5th, going all the way through May the 27th. Moving on to rider news, it doesn't look like it's a good time to be a world time trial champion. You remember in the last show I told you about Fabian Cancellara getting injured in a race, breaking his collarbone in several places and having surgery. And now tragedy has befallen Olympic favorite and world time trial champion Tony Martin. He was completing a training ride near his home in Switzerland, going about 20, 25 miles per hour, about 2 miles from home, when he collided with a car. According to Tony Martin on his website, shortly after the accident, quote, "The left side of my face is totally smashed. My left eye is bloodshot and completely swollen shut." He then went on to say the lights went out, and apparently he was unconscious for about 15 minutes, and he simply cannot remember much of the accident. Now, initially it was reported that Tony was probably going to need surgery as a result of the accident, but it turns out that he will not need surgery, despite the fact that he fractured, his shoulder blade, his upper arm, and bones in his face during the accident. In a later statement, a couple of days later, Tony Martin was quoted as saying, quote, "My feeling today is much better than the last 2 days. I'm happy that the fractures won't need surgery. I'm at home now. For me, it's really important. The day of the accident, I was thinking, why has this happened to me? But now I have to say I was lucky. It could have been much worse." The Olympics are coming up this summer. We've got now both Tony Martin and Fabian Cancellara injured. However, the hope is that both of them will be back and strong for the Tour de France and for the Olympics. We do wish both of them a speedy and full recovery. Meanwhile, Tony Martin's teammate on the Omega Pharma Quickstep team, Levi Leipheimer, is continuing to work on his recovery. As you'll recall, he suffered a fracture in his left fibula a couple of weeks ago when he was hit by a car during a training ride the day before the start of the Pais Vasco race. At this point now, Levi is looking doubtful for the Tour of California. As you know, Levi has won the Tour of California 3 times already. Levi tweeted on April 20th saying, "Tried riding today, didn't go as well as I'd hoped, but I'll keep trying." Meanwhile, on the Omega Pharma Quickstep website, Levi is quoted as saying, "The situation isn't pleasant at all. Ever since the day of the accident, I haven't managed to get back on my bike out on the road, and I honestly don't know when that will be possible. Recovery is slower than we expected. I still have pain in my leg and I'm having trouble walking. I also have pain in my ribs and hips due to the fall, and this is limiting my movement." On whether or not he would be able to compete in this year's Tour of California, Levi is quoted as saying, "The Tour of California was one of the objectives for my season. I wanted to be competitive in order to win a 4th overall title. At this point, merely participating will be a success. I'll put in my best effort to manage to be on the starting line, even though it won't be easy." The Omega Pharma team is saying that they're expecting an update on both Levi and Tony Martin next week, and I'll bring it to you on the next episode of the Fredcast. And in other rider news, it's time to talk about doping for the week, starting with somebody we've talked about here on the show many, many times. How many of you remember Ricardo Rico and the fact that he was banned from cycling for 20 months after he tested positive for using the blood booster Cera, C-E-R-A, following 2 wins in mountain stages in the 2008 Tour de France? He was subsequently then fired by his team. Everybody remembers that, right? But do you remember last year when we talked about the fact that Rico was rushed to the hospital in what appeared to be blood doping being self-administered and then having botched that blood doping? As a result of that incident, Italy's Olympic Committee, CONI, C-O-N-I, has now banned Ricardo Rico for this second doping offense for, wait for it, 12 years. That's right, Rico is now banned from professional cycling for a dozen years, and he was fined $6,540 and ordered to pay legal costs of $19,630, essentially ending Ricardo Rico's professional cycling career. Although, considering the fact that Rico has now been convicted twice of doping, one has to wonder what kind of career he would have had he, or well, even if he would have had a career to begin with, had he not used doping products. It is a sad state of affairs, but I do have to say, as I'm coming to believe more and more, that professional cycling is doing a good job of cleaning itself up, as evidenced by these now two convictions of Ricardo Rico, although one has to consider what are the motivations and what else is going on in cycling that we haven't found that makes someone so desperate as to try to blood dope without using, even any of the experts that are out there in the field. So it's a very, very sad state of affairs. I do have to say I feel bad for Ricardo Rico, although I am glad that he is no longer in the sport. And in another blow to cycling, one of Russia's top contenders for a medal at this year's Olympics in London, Denis Galimzyanov, a member of Team Katusha, was now suspended from cycling after testing positive for a performance-enhancing substance. Now, this is simply a test finding EPO in his blood after submitting a sample on March 22nd. So this is just the A test. He certainly can request that his B test be sampled. However, Russian cycling team manager Hans-Michael Holzer told VeloNews, quote, "It's a bad, very bad surprise. I've only heard the news 10 minutes ago, but I can confirm that the team is not involved. Whatever he did, it was his personal choice." Now, Galimzyanov has been racing for Katusha for 5 seasons and was expected to be one of Russia's stars at the London 2012 Olympic Games. Galimzyanov won the Paris-Brussels race last year, and he took 11th in the World Road Racing Championship in Copenhagen last year. More details as they're available on future episodes of the Fredcast. And finally, a good news story tonight involving cycling, but I fear that for those of you who aren't in the United States or maybe aren't fans of major American sports, I need to do a little bit of explanation. Some of you, at least in the United States, should be familiar with Bo Jackson. Probably, if you don't know him for football, you might know him for baseball. If you don't know him for football or baseball, you might know him for the Nike commercials, you know, Bo knows sports. But let me tell you who Bo Jackson is. Bo Jackson is Vincent Edward Bo Jackson. He was born November 30th, 1962. He's a former all-star in both American football and in baseball. And when he was a running back for Auburn University, he won the 1985 Heisman Trophy. After winning the Heisman Trophy, he went on to the National Football League playing running back for the Los Angeles Raiders. Yes, I said the Los Angeles Raiders. And then he played left field and designated hitter for the Kansas City Royals, the Chicago White Sox, and the California Angels. Bo knows sports. Well, Bo, as you heard, went to Auburn University. Auburn University, located in the American state of Alabama. And for those of you who may not be aware, Alabama was the site last year, 12 months ago, of a very, very bad spate of tornadoes that went through and devastated the state. As a result, Bo Jackson and friends, including Major League Baseball player Ken Griffey Jr., guy we've never heard of by the name of Lance Armstrong, NBA, National Basketball Association star Scottie Pippen, and downhill skier and Olympic medalist Peekaboo Street have started a ride across the state of Alabama. Those folks, plus 100 other cyclists, starting a 5-day, 300-mile bicycle ride across northern Alabama to raise money for storm relief in the state of Alabama. You can learn more about the event at bobikesbama.com, and there is a great video on there. I'm going to play a little bit of audio. I don't think Bo will mind. They're looking to raise $1 million for tornado relief. And here's Bo Jackson in about a minute and a half long audio segment from their video explaining what he's doing and why he's doing it.
East Alabama has been hit incredibly hard.
Some of us live in areas where there's the extreme heat, which we get through.
Holy cow, guys, this is a massive tornado.
Some of us live in areas where we have a lot of snow and ice, which we get through. But it's hard to get through something like this. It's going to be a five-day ride. We're going to start our ride in a little town called Henninger, Alabama. And then we're going to finish the ride in Tuscaloosa at the University of Alabama. We're going to stop and really show the rest of the country the devastation behind that storm that came through there. I would encourage the country to take a serious look at what's behind me. This is the reason why I'm doing this. This is the reason why Nike, Trek, CSC are putting their names behind this rally. Everybody can come together for a good cause and donate to a charity so the people that have literally lost everything can have some hope. We want you to donate. We want you to be a sponsor. Every dollar that's being donated to this cause will go directly to the Governor's Emergency Relief Fund of Alabama. And that's what Bo Bikes Bama is all about.
Now, Bo Bikes Bama is going to take place from April the 24th through the 28th, and there's several ways that you can get involved. Number one, if you'd like to ride with Bo and his quote-unquote friends, you simply pay a $200 registration fee or more. They're happy to take more, and you get the opportunity to ride with Bo and friends for one day during the ride. However, they're accepting donations both big and small, and every little bit helps. You can simply go to BoBikesBama.com and click on the donations button, and they will be happy to take whatever you like. I think this is a great way for a public figure, a professional athlete who has seen the devastation that occurred in Alabama, who is personally affected by it because of his connection to Alabama, and using cycling as a way to raise awareness and raise funds for this very, very important cause. And there are links in the show notes to where you can get more information. But the bottom line, go to BoBikesBama.com. Well, that's going to do it for the news on this week's episode of the Fredcast. And it's time to move on to the features segment. I've got two segments for you today. And the first, well, it starts off with a question. Have you ever had something on your roof rack? Maybe a kayak, maybe skis. Probably not skis, maybe a bicycle, and forgotten that it was up on the roof of your car and, drove into a drive-through or perhaps your garage at home. Well, I can tell you this has happened in my life. Okay, hang on. Okay, she's not listening. So Mrs. Fredcast, very early in our marriage, was driving my car. For some reason, we were two cars, and we lived in a little apartment. This was very early in our marriage. And I drove home, and then she was driving my car, and on the roof of my car were, you guessed it, both of our mountain bikes. And I got home, I took a shower, we had obviously been on a ride. I was doing whatever I was doing, and the next thing I knew, the intercom to our apartment buzzed, and I couldn't understand, you know, what the problem was. Maybe there were no batteries left in the remote that opened up the underground garage. And so I pushed the button and I said, hello. And I heard this voice and it sounded something like this. Could you come down to the garage, please? And I had no idea what was going on, but I was a little worried. And I ran down there and the bikes and the rack were lying on the ground and the car was in the garage. And they clearly had been separated because she had forgotten, as can easily happen, that the bikes were up on the roof. Thankfully, no major damage to the bikes, no major damage to the car, little scratches, nothing that couldn't be fixed. And everything got fixed. Everything got put back together. But ever since then, anytime the bikes are on top of the car, it's always a concern. And so we're always reminding each other, the bikes are on top. And of course, you know, I give her a little bit of crap about what happened so many years ago. And there have been a number of different things that people have mentioned over the years. We've talked about them here on the show, whether it's putting something on your dashboard or putting something on your garage door so that you notice it when you get home, or maybe you hide your garage door opener in a strange place to remind you, right, there's bikes on top of the car. People have come out with all kinds of gizmos and gadgets that you can buy for several hundred dollars in a lot of cases to remind you that the bikes are on top of the car. But recently, my friend Kendall, who writes the Confessions of a Bike Junkie blog at confessionsofabikejunkie.blogspot.com, made me aware that there are a couple of apps for my iPhone that would do the same thing for $1 or $2. And so I thought I'm going to try them both and review them for you here on the show, because this not only is something that I can use, but undoubtedly something that many of you in the audience could use as well. I found two apps on the iTunes store that I downloaded and installed on my iPhone. One is Bike Saver, which is 99 cents, and the other is Rack Reminder, which is $1.99. Both of them work pretty much, very much in the same way. You choose a destination address, you activate the app, and then you drive away. When you return to the chosen address, the app is supposed to remind you with an audio alert and with messages on the screen to let you know that you do indeed have something up on your roof rack so that hopefully you won't drive into your garage. So a couple of things that you need to keep in mind. Number one, you have to actually activate the app. If you don't activate the app, there's no way that it's going to remind you. Initially, I thought that I would end up activating the app, or at least remembering to activate the app, when I left home after loading the bikes on the roof. For some reason, I was never really able to remember to do that under real life circumstances. Instead, I would find that I would activate the app when I put the bikes back up on top of the car after my ride, wherever I had been. And so in a real life situation, that's simply the way that it worked for me. I did test it in both situations, one where I activated it before I left home and then had it warn me when I got home, and two, when I activated it from some remote location and then had it remind me when I got home. The second thing you need to remember when using either of these apps is to make sure that your phone is not on silent or vibrate. Now, again, that probably seems pretty logical, but in my case, I hate leaving my phone on anything but vibrate. I know how other people's phones and all the noise around us and the beeps from text messages and everybody's annoying ringtones. I know how it annoys me. And so I just sort of assume that it annoys other people. So my phone's usually on vibrate. But in this case, not a difficult thing to remember. Look, you're setting the app to remind you. So of course, you're going to make sure that it's not on silent. And in my case, I made it as loud as possible when I would set the app so that that way, if I had my windows open or the sunroof open or I was talking to somebody or my music was loud, I'd still be able to hear the alert when it went off. Both of the applications that I tested allow you to store multiple addresses. So let's say, for instance, you've got a garage at your office that you are worried that you might drive into, or perhaps at mom's house or your best friend's house. Or maybe you want it to warn you before you drive through the Starbucks or McDonald's drive. Why are you going to McDonald's? But let's say you're going through a drive-thru anyway. And of course, you can save your home address as well. Now, one of the concerns I had when I first started using the two apps was that they were going to, because of the constant use of the GPS, they were going to cause a major drain on the battery of my phone. Now, I can't say that I took the phone, went on a long ride of, say, 50 miles, and then went home, and then went back and did the exact same ride, but this time with each of the apps activated. I didn't get that detailed, but I can tell you just from sort of anecdotal experience, I did not see an appreciable drain or greater drain on my iPhone's battery when using either one of the apps. And what's interesting to note is that both of the app developers claim to be using unique, quote unquote, technology to ensure that they're using as little battery as possible. I can only guess at what that means is that instead of, say, using a GPS application on your phone where the GPS is activated all the time while that app is open, that in this case, the app just sort of peeks at the GPS periodically, maybe every minute or so, or maybe every certain number of seconds. And that way, by not having the GPS active 100% of the time, that's how they're ensuring that they're not draining the battery. One difference between the two apps, BikeSaver allows you to choose from among a number of different alarm tones, whereas RackReminder just has its own alarm tone, and that's it. Another difference that I noticed was that RackReminder was a bit inconsistent in the distance from my destination location at which it would remind me that I had bikes up on the roof. As an example, the first time I tested it, it alerted me about 1.25 miles away from my house that I had the something on the roof. I silenced the alarm, and then it continued to, it was almost like a snooze on an alarm clock. It continued to remind me as I got closer. I found that that was really good. But then later, when I used the very same app, it didn't alert me until maybe about 200 yards from my house. And then in other situations, and this happened multiple times, it failed to remind me at all. And when I would go back to the app, it would still show that the alarm was active. Yet even though I was in my home, it had never reminded me. And this happened to me 2 or 3 times, and that was a bit troubling. On the other hand, with BikeSaver, I never had that problem. It reminded me every single time, no matter what destination that I inputted into the app, it reminded me in each case about 100 yards, 100 to 200 yards away from the location that I had something up on the roof. In the case of my home, it would remind me 2 houses away consistently every single time I returned to my home. And I found that that was really helpful. And I also like the fact that I was able to choose my own alarm. So between the two, if I was going to give you my recommendation, I would definitely go with BikeSaver simply because I found it consistently alerted me, and it alerted me at a consistent distance every single time. Plus, I like the fact that I can choose from among 15 or 16 different custom alert sounds. I liked that a lot. So when I do these tests, I tend to test a number of apps and then just leave my choice app on my phone. In this case, BikeSaver is going to stay on my phone. I'm probably going to leave RackReminder on there as well because I'm hoping that they'll come out with an update to fix some of the issues that I found with it, because I think that once it does work and it's able to be a little bit more consistent, it might be something that I'd be able to recommend to you again in the future. So those are the two apps that I checked out, BikeSaver and RackReminder. There are links in the show notes to both, and you can go ahead and check them out. One other thing, I don't have an Android phone. As you know, I'm an Apple aficionado. I drank the Kool-Aid a long time ago. Don't have an Android phone, but I did locate another app for Android, and I put a link in the show notes. It's called CarTop Alert. It sounds like it does some of the very same things that BikeSaver and RackReminder are supposed to do, so you can go ahead and check it out. And by the way, if you do check it out and you find that it works, or maybe you find out that it doesn't work, let me know, and I'd be happy to share that with your fellow Fredcast listeners. Finally, in tonight's features, I want to return to a story that I talked about in the news tonight. And the story, of course, is about the unfortunate situation where the gentleman was killed when he was riding a bike that had been subject to a recall. And there is an indication that had the individual known about the recall, perhaps he would not have been involved in the fatal accident. And I know that there are some of you who want to maintain vigilance in being alerted about product recalls, not just here on the Fredcast, but maybe you'd like to get that information in your email inbox as well. And so those of you who are interested in doing that, there's a very, very easy way to do that. And it is the way that I am alerted to product recalls about cycling, and that is to go to the Consumer Product Safety Commission's website, and that is at cpsc.gov, Consumer Product Safety Commission, cpsc.gov. And when you are there, you can sign up for email alerts on product recalls. And the great thing about that is that you can Because you can imagine there's a lot of products in the stream of commerce available for retail sale in the United States. And of course, you may not want to get an alert about a household item, or you may not want something on kids' items. You may only want recalls associated with bikes. And so the CPSC has set up a number of different email lists that you can subscribe to that will give you the ability to learn about these recalls in your inbox as soon as they are released. Now, product recalls, for those of you who maybe aren't familiar, are issued when a manufacturer or perhaps a governmental entity in the United States, in the case of the Consumer Product Safety Commission, is alerted to a situation, perhaps a defect with a product that is serious enough to cause the manufacturer to have concern or the governmental agency to have concern that it could cause injury or problems for other consumers in the future. They enter into negotiations with the governmental agency, and as a result of those negotiations, recalls are made effective as quickly as possible. When recalls are issued by the United States Consumer Product Safety Commission, press releases are issued the very same day. And when those press releases are issued, that's when the CPSC will send you an alert that very same day into your email box. Receiving email alerts from the Consumer Product Safety Commission is easy and free, and all you need to do is go to the show notes for tonight's show. This is episode number 189, and I've provided you with a link. All you'll have to do is give the CPSC an email address and then choose a list that you're interested in following. In the case of cycling recalls, you simply want to sign up under the recreation list. They'll then send you a quick email just a few moments later, verifying that you had signed up for the list. And then once you click the verification link, you'll then get a confirmation from the CPSC indicating that you are signed up. And then from then on the day that recalls are issued, you will get the recall notices in your inbox. So if you're an extremely vigilant or perhaps worrisome individual and you want to know about product recalls on the day that they're issued, this is a great way to do so. Or I know that we have a lot of bike shops that listen. I would highly recommend that in that case, somebody at the shop, perhaps the manager or the owner, signs up for these alerts. And when these recalls are issued, you can post them in a prominent location in your shop. This way, you can help ensure that you, your friends, your customers, those in your bike club, or anyone you know will be notified of product recalls in a timely fashion and avoid any possibility of injury as a result of using a cycling or other product that has been recalled for safety reasons. I hope that helps. I hope that you are interested in signing up for it, and that if you have any questions about this or any comments, please feel free to let me know. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Fredcast. Before we go, and by the way, if you skip ads, and I hope you don't, you might want to listen to this one because this one could be worth some money to you. I just want to thank our sponsor, Jensen USA, at jensenusa.com/thefredcast, and remind you of our Bar Shot Contest. Jensen USA is going to be giving to 10 listeners a $20 gift certificate for anything you'd like to purchase at Jensen USA. And all you have to do is, when you're out on a ride, take a photograph from behind your handlebars, a so-called bar shot, and tweet it out to @JensenUSA and @Fredcast, including the hashtag barshot, all one word. Include your photo, include your location, and let us know anything you'd like to know about the shot, and get that tweet out there by 6 p.m. Pacific time on Monday, May the 7th, and then Jensen USA will click from among their 10 favorites, and those listeners are going to get a $20 gift certificate to Jensen USA. And once you've got that gift certificate, you know that you're going to be able to find the best prices, amazing selection, and unparalleled customer service at Jensen USA. Just go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast. We thank Jensen USA for their support, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Well, as I said, that does it for this week's episode of the Fredcast. If you'd like to contact us with any information at any time, questions, concerns, and I do want more listener interaction, so feel free to send any questions you like. We'll get them answered out on the show. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is simply Fredcast. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com, or you can go to our website at www.thefredcast.com. If you'd like to leave an audio comment or question, go ahead and use the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. Well, if you've been listening to the show, well, if you've even listened just to one episode of the show, you know what's coming up next, and that's right, it's PodSafe Cycling Music. And this week's PodSafe Cycling Music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by IndoorCyclingMusic.com. Sounds different, right? Stand by. That's the home of the free weekly featured track and premium members content of weekly 30 and 60 minute cardio mixes and monthly 90 minute cardio mixes to get the world moving. Now you're probably thinking to yourself, what happened to Cadence Revolution? Well, it's simple. They decided that they wanted a new URL, one that was a little bit more descriptive of what they do, and they are now IndoorCyclingMusic.com. Same guys, new name, same great music. And speaking of that music, tonight's PodSafe Cycling Music track is called My Heart Beats, and it's by Veronica Falls. I want to thank you so much for listening to the Fredcast, for staying subscribed to the Fredcast, for interacting with the Fredcast, and for telling your friends and cycling pals about the Fredcast Cycling Podcast at www.thefredcast.com. We'll be back shortly with another episode of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast, but between this show and the next, enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Yeah.